Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. I'm really excited to welcome Michael Laron back to the podcast. The last time I talked to him on the podcast was 2 years ago, and it's an episode that has haunted me because Michael is incredible. I think the title of that episode was The Man Who Writes 10 Books a Year. And what you're going to discover in this episode is an absolutely inspiring process, not just for how he is so prolific as a writer, but really what drives him to holistically think of creativity as a core part of his life. Michael does a lot of stuff. We get into it in detail in that episode. We talk a lot about that mix between the personal stuff, the work stuff, and the creative stuff. And he really shared a lot here that just blew me away. He talks a lot about the importance of putting mental health first. He gave a really clear example of that, how he's been doing that recently. He digs into exactly how he writes so often. And essentially, I think I would put this as he makes every moment a creative moment. So he writes a lot. And the real trick here is he writes a fair amount of words on his phone. And we talk in depth about how he does that. He gives really good advice about focusing on what you can control and about the idea of embracing short-term failure in order to really invest in long-term success. I am so inspired by not just what he creates, but how he does it. You can find him at authorlevelup.com. That's authorlevelup.com. He's also at michaellaron.com. He's got a podcast called The Writer's Journey. All this stuff, we get into it in the episode, and I will repeat it all at the end. Here is Michael Laron. Hey everyone, this is Dan Blank. I'm excited to be chatting again with Michael Laron. Welcome.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be back. Great to band back together again.
Yes. So you were last on the podcast 2 years ago, and I reference that episode so often for a lot of reasons, but one was always you are so prolific in creating. You're so focused. You do so much. And I have always been someone in my life where I'm kind of like the doer. I wake up and I want to do. You are so much more of a doer than even I am that it's just amazing to me. And I guess maybe the first place to start off is you seem to have this clarity and these systems in place for you to do so much, and we'll cover that in a minute. But I want to talk about how on earth you have had to adjust because of the pandemic, because maybe half or everything of how you used to manage your life, has it changed because of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like many people listening, I have definitely struggled during the pandemic. I would say that the first couple of weeks after the lockdown were really hard emotionally. Just the fact that I wasn't going to see my coworkers again for a long time. The fact that I was having to adjust to working from home, just the general tension and anxiety on the news. And I'm not going to lie, that was really, really tough. And I eventually got to a point where I said, you know what, I've got to start picking myself up again. Because if I don't, if I just wait until the end of the pandemic to start writing again, who knows how long that's going to take? You know? And so fortunately, I was in a position to where at work, I can work from home now, at least indefinitely. So I said, okay, so I'm waking up at 5:30 every morning already to do what I do. Let me take an hour off of that. Let me get some more sleep so I can, you know, get some sleep and take care of my mental health, that sort of thing. Because, you know, everybody asks me, how do I sleep? So I got an extra hour of sleep every night. And then I get up at 6:30 every morning. And I carry on. So I continue writing, continue marketing, continue pretty much doing everything I've been doing. And I've just been trying to build stuff during this downtime while the world is asleep so that I can improve my business and improve my creativity. You know?
So much to dig into. And I can't even tell you how meaningful that is, that the idea with everything going on, the first thing that you said, which is what a lot of people are saying, this has been tough, but I'm investing in my mental health. And core to that is sleep, which I love hearing. I love the idea that I didn't know where you're going with that. I didn't know if you're going to say, hey, wake up at 5:30. I'm going to wake up at 5. And that way I can bump. I love that you went the opposite with that and the reasons why.
I've never gotten as much sleep in my life as I've gotten during the pandemic. That's like the one like fringe benefit. It's like, I think once this is all over, we're all going to say, wow, I got a lot more sleep during that period. So I'm actually enjoying that, and it's definitely a good thing.
How do you view that? Because again, you're someone, and I want to, in a few minutes, I want to go over like all the stuff that you balance or juggle in your life. I don't know if it's a balance or a juggle, but how do you think about that? Because I imagine that you will internally feel a lot of pressure to attend to your work and your family and your writing and the marketing, all that stuff. How is it that you even come at the idea of sleep is essential, sleep and rest and mental health are the foundation to that? Because we live in a culture where it tends to be the opposite. It tends to be, I'm going to optimize. If I wake up at 5, in 26 and a half minutes, I can do a cardio explosion workout and like all this trendy garbage that just like sucks from us. How do you come at that idea of rest and mental health?
Well, rest and mental health are really important. If you don't have your mental health in shape during this period, it's going to be very, very difficult. I think right now, and this is just my suspicion, I think a lot of creatives are burning out right now because they weren't in a place mentally before all this happened to be able to deal with this and prepare for it. And so now I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that said, you know what, I just decided to hit pause on my creative endeavors and on my writing because I just am not in the right headspace right now to deal with this. And I totally get it. I mean, this is a difficult time. You know, I mean, who would have thought, we were talking before the call began, who would have thought at the beginning of this year we'd be in a pandemic and that we'd all be stuck at home, encouraged to wear masks when we talk to even our family members. And just the general news is just turning the temperature on everything up. And so what we have to do is turn the temperature on everything down in our personal lives. And if you're not doing that, you have to think about ways to do it because you can go nuts right now. Just watching the news and talking to people and just the general feeling of anxiety that exists in the world. And so I've always viewed mental health as a shield, as a, kind of this mental shielding to kind of help protect myself and insulate myself somewhat from some of those major swings that are going on in the world. And so if you haven't done that essential work, it's never too late. But I think that those creatives that were in a better headspace before all this started are going to be in a much better space when it's over.
I love that. And you said something else there too, which I've always thought about this because I remember this from the recession in 08. And you talked about how you're doing this creative and other work now so that whenever we come out of this, you are, and I forget the exact words you use, but you're essentially setting yourself up for success. And I think that that is a very profound way of looking at all this. And I always look back at, I'm now celebrating 10 years of what I do, of the company and doing this full time. And it started in the recession. And I always remembered a bumper sticker I saw back then, which was on like a, it looked like a contractor's truck. And it just said, I'm not participating in the recession. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they meant it, but how I always read it was this idea of, I'm going to invest in myself. I'm going to try to be helpful. I'm going to try to be inventive. I'm not going to just have the narrative of, quote unquote, it's the economy, so why bother trying? How do you come at that? Because like you're saying, which is I think how we're all feeling, there's so much more asked of us in many ways now. There's so many important things going on. It's so easy to take what we do, even important stuff, and put it on the shelf. How did you come to that conclusion for yourself?
I asked myself at the beginning of this, when it all started, it was funny because as the world was shutting down, I was traveling for business and I was going to teach a class and I was in a car ride and I said, you know what, I'm going to turn off all the music and I'm just going to allow myself to think for 2 hours. And as I was driving, I asked myself one question, and that is, what's my COVID-19 survival story? And when this is all done, what do I want this to look like? And what will I tell my daughter who's 5 years old. And I think she's going to look at this in 5 years and not remember a thing other than I had to stay home a lot and we had to wear masks when we go outside. So what's my COVID-19 survival story? What did I do for my family? What did I do for myself? What did I do for my readers? And am I going to be able to stand up tall and look myself in the mirror when this is all over and tell my story with pride? And I didn't know what that story would look like. But what I did know is that I was going to talk about it, and I was going to use this as a test for myself in terms of leadership, in terms of what kind of father, what kind of writer, what kind of creator I could be, kind of husband I could be, and lean into it with all my might.
I love that. It's so interesting. And I think this is something that writers are asked to do a lot, whether they know it or not, is that idea of crafting your narrative. And, you know, with the you live this, but this is also part of what I talk to writers about all the time. It's that we're always known as one thing. I'm a spouse, I'm an accountant, I'm a whatever it is. And then kind of on the side, I'm writing. And I always love the idea of taking control of that narrative, of talking about your life, of how you being an accountant is making you a better writer, or you doing something with your children or your mother or your sister is a part of your creative process. And I love that idea of you asking that question in the beginning is a way of focusing on what you can control when there's so much outside of your control.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the key. You've got to focus on what you can control. And like I said, this is a difficult time. I mean, for some people, it's like the walls are closing in. And you can't diminish that, because some people, you can only do what you can do, you know. And if you can't create during this time, I don't think anybody's going to hold it against you. I don't think anybody's going to come to your house and say, you know what, you didn't do anything during this pandemic. Come on, you know, and this is hard. This is hard for me even to be on this podcast talking to you about this. You know, it's easy for me to say, but, you know, from a day-to-day perspective, it's not easy. And so one of the ways that I've always been able to get myself through hard times has been always to reinforce that narrative in my mind and try to reinforce that positive thinking. And it's not always easy, but it can be done.
Can we do a little recap of all that, I guess, all that you do in life, all that you're responsible for? Because, I mean, and this is the idea of your work, your school, your family, and then your writing, and then all the other stuff around the writing, too. What's sort of the quick bullet point of all that you actively do?
Oh, okay.
And I can try to do it if you want me to try, and then you can kind of correct me, but I don't want to put it on you.
I'll try. We'll be here till midnight. All right. So first things first, I'm a father, and I've got a beautiful 5-year-old daughter. I've got a puppy, and I've got a pet rabbit and a beautiful wife. And so my family comes first. I also have a career in insurance. So I am a consultant at a Fortune 100 insurance company that is a very high stakes, high pressure job. I'm also a writer. So I've written over 50 books of science fiction and fantasy and self-help for writers. And that's been a really fun deal. I am a YouTuber. So I have a weekly YouTube channel called Author Level Up, where I publish videos to help writers write better and faster. I have a podcast called The Writer's Journey that basically is me turning on the microphone and talking like I'm talking to you about whatever's on my mind. So it's in many ways an audio blog. I have another podcast called The Writing Tip of the Day, which is one writing tip in 2 to 3 minutes per day that is on Amazon Alexa devices and other podcast networks and things like that. I'm also a volunteer with the Alliance of Independent Authors. I am their outreach manager. So it's my job to reach out to businesses, to recruit them to come in to Ally. It's a nonprofit organization for authors. And they provide a lot of really, really good information to help them write better and write faster and select the right service providers. And on top of all that, I'm also a part-time teacher teaching insurance classes on the side. So that's in a nutshell, I think, most of the things I'm doing right now.
So I think the last time we did the interview, you also added on, in the evenings and weekends, I'm in law school.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that. That's one thing I forgot. Yeah, I'm in law school right now, too. I'm almost done.
I mean,
hey, when you give a list like that, you're always going to forget something.
it's and that's just the cherry on top of the sundae, that idea that everything you listed is so multifaceted, so intense, that any one of them, a single person be justified of saying, oh, I've got a family, and it's like, you know how that is, that takes up all my time, or I work in insurance and I'm at a very high stakes job. And I love that there were so many things I want to dig into it. But then on top of that is this thing that I just always look as a, I don't know why anyone would do this. It's so arduous. Law school. It's so difficult from my understanding of this, that like on top of all that, you've been pursuing this in your quote unquote, I'll call spare time, although it's clearly not spare. It's funny because when I hear that, it's not just that I hear the scope of it. What I hear is that you're someone who's in third or fourth gear in all of these things. You don't just say, oh yeah, and I've got a kid. It's like you start off saying families first. It's like the first thing in the list. And you talk about your job. And it's not like, oh yeah, I do some light consulting, whatever. You're like, no, this is my job. And I travel for it and I teach with it. It's a Fortune 100 company. It's all there. You mentioned writing. It's not like, oh, I've been working on a memoir for a couple years. And it's like, I've published 50 books. Talk about like, and again, it's not like, well, I'm taking some Udemy classes in law. I might want to go to, it's like, I'm in law school. So many questions here. Why so many things? And I don't even know what the question is. I don't know if that's a fair question. It's just something I hear that, and it's like, I have to imagine what's happening to every listener, what happens to my brain is your brain breaks a little bit. Because I think of like, our toilet is a little weird right now. And I can think of, there's a big chunk of my brain that is in the like the toilet fixing mode. And here you are in like six or seven really critical modes.
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And some people think, oh my gosh, this guy's really scattered. And the reason I do so much has always been strategic. One, it is insurance for the future, because you never know what will happen in the future. When I started law school, when I started writing books, I never thought in the middle of a pandemic that I would be very glad that I went to law school, very glad that I write books as supplemental income, right? So many of the decisions that I make, or at least in the decisions that I made 3 years ago to be so busy right now, really just are hedging my bets against the future and having okay. something to fall back on if the stuff hits the proverbial fan, so to speak. And also in many respects, I'm all about learning. So when I started my author career, I said, you know, I want to make money. I want to be a full-time writer, but I recognize that this is going to take me time, and I'm going to be kind to myself, and I'm going to allow myself to fail as much as possible, because failure is a far better teacher than success. So I don't plan, or at least my plan was not to make any kind of profit for at least 10 years, right? And in that way, I can make as many mistakes as I can. I can learn as much as I can. And everything I do is going to serve the bigger benefit of helping me become a smarter and a better and a more efficient writer and business person. And so if that means for the first 10 years, things are going to be kind of nuts, that's fine. But at the end of that 10 years, oh man, where am I going to be?
It's such an incredible way to view it. Something that really strikes me with this too is that you sort of play two ends of this that I think is extraordinarily rare, which is, you talk about this as like an insurance, but half of what you do is a traditional high intensity job where you have to show up and you have to be that quote unquote team player. You're going to law school, you know, so it's this very, like, you are, I don't know how it is. I imagine you're a cog in a bigger machine. You are the role of the student, and you're going through everything you're told you have to do. And the other end, you are so entrepreneurial. Like, I have seen you grow this YouTube channel. I see all the stuff you put out there, and of course, all the writing and all that. It's like, how does that work, or how do you even think about that? Because in some ways, it's so structured and you're in a system. In another way, you are that consummate entrepreneur who every day is inventing 10 new things you're going to try to do, and you're so open to failing at them.
Yeah, and one of the reasons for that is because I'm constantly switching between both worlds. So a lot of people, when I talk to them, they say, I don't want to think about work when I come home. I just want, when I come home, I just want to be able to play, right? And when I'm at work, I can't play. So in their mind, they've drawn a very rigid wall between both of those worlds. I've never had a wall between both of those worlds. For me, everything that I learn at work, I can bring it over into my writing and vice versa. So it's everything that I do is liquid knowledge, right? So one of the only reasons I went to law school, and I'm going to admit this publicly, was so that I could become a better writer. So I could learn copyright, I could learn business, I could learn all those things that writers need to know but don't know. And so I very strategically took classes that would help me become a better writer. Like last semester, I took copyright law, right? So I took things that I learned from law and brought it into writing. I took things that I learned as a consultant in a very high stakes environment in terms of emotional intelligence and how to be efficient and how to deal with issues and problems and people that come up, right? I brought that into my writing. So I've never seen that wall there. And if you think about tearing down that wall between your work life and your personal life, first things first, you got to make sure you have the balance. Like, I'm not saying not to have work-life balance, but if you tear down that wall, it's amazing how you start seeing things, because everything you do starts energizing and fueling you and pushing you forward.
That's a huge point. And tell me if this gets too personal, because I always be really respectful of everyone's lines. But, you know, I work on my own. So typically I'll work at a studio across town, but the last few months I've been working from home. And what I find is that, because I've got a young family as well, that is a negotiation. It's a negotiation with, obviously, my wife and my children and all of that. And that when we lived in normal times, you would negotiate that at certain points. Oh, I'm going to get a studio, or I'll do these hours. How can we do this? How are we going to this week's different. How do we handle it? I imagine that's to a certain degree you've had that. Have you found in the pandemic that that what I'm calling negotiation is maybe not the right term, that you're doing that more often or differently because now everyone's in one place and the normal things that we'd negotiated are changing? And then to your point, the mental health, everyone's dealing with that differently, including the five-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I've always talked about openly is, you know, I make sure that my wife and I are doing that negotiation. So when I'm writing, you have to remember, when you're writing and you're working on your creative endeavors, that's time away from your family. You know, you can't do both at the same time. And so I fully recognize that. And so when I'm not writing, I'm making sure I give my wife the time that she needs to, you know, at least in pre-pandemic, was hanging out with her friends or, you know, pursuing whatever it is that she wanted to pursue, so that we try to stay balanced. And so what I found is that it has changed during the pandemic. I find that I'm recording my podcast a lot later at night now, because I used to be able to record them sometimes during the day, but with my daughter stomping around upstairs, it's kind of hard to do. Although my listeners have given me grace anytime they hear it. You know, it is what it is. But yeah, it's changed, but the fundamentals are the same.
I love that. And I think too, I mean, you said this earlier, the idea of having a solid foundation. And I think what's great about that is that it should, the foundation should make you more flexible when things you can't predict happen, like a global pandemic.
Yeah, exactly.
So something I remember when you started your YouTube channel. And I've kind of watched you really do that. And the thing about YouTube that I don't know, I don't think everyone knows is, I guess, two things. One is how big it is and it's a social network, but two, how difficult YouTube it is. I think YouTube is so difficult for people to find success with. And I remember when you started, and I don't remember exactly what the numbers were then, but right now you have something like, you know, 20 plus thousand subscribers. You're, as is your way, you're committed. So you were just doing video after video, and as I scroll through the thumbnails, I watch how you evolve to like a new style, and then the lighting and the expressions and the emojis. What has your YouTube journey been like specifically? And I just ask on that because I know it's such a different thing than writing, and that it's such a difficult ecosystem to succeed in.
Yeah, YouTube has been a lot of fun, and I've had a lot of ups and downs with YouTube. It's funny that you ask about the journey about YouTube, because when I started it, I just did it on a whim. Like, I didn't think it would be successful at all, because exactly what you said, my perception was that YouTube would be very, very difficult. So I started, I put up a few videos. I don't even remember what they were. And there was almost nothing. You know, I got a couple of views here and there. It was probably my family members. But I got really lucky right out of the gate. So I listened to a lot of YouTubers on terms of how you get discovered, how you get videos discovered. And I did a video, and it was called 10 Ways to Outline Your Novel. And I literally just recited 10 different ways, 10 different methods, and 10 different books that you can use to write your novel. And overnight, that video blew up. And all of a sudden, I had over 1,000 subscribers. And I'm thinking to myself, holy cow, whatever I did here, I've just proven to myself that I can do this. And so then I doubled down on the channel. I started doing more videos. And many of those videos were not very successful. But I continued doing a few videos here and there that gained me subscribers. And it's been a really, really cool journey. And one of the things that I've always tried to do is be a little bit different than the other YouTubers. One of my blessings and curses is that I am deeply analytical. So I do videos that come at things from different angles. So for example, I just did a video. I'm doing videos now on very in-depth fiction writing. So how to write a sex scene, for example, or how to write a fight scene. Or how do you look at the craft of fiction as a writer, and how do you see certain things on the page that the mega bestsellers like Michael Crichton and Nora Roberts and John Grisham, what is it that they're doing? And what are some of the things that we can learn from them that we can immediately port over into our writing? Like I'm not about theory at all. I can't stand theory. There was an influencer once, he said, "I am not an academic. I'm a pracademic." So I try to keep things practical, right? So you can watch my videos and then you can immediately take what you learn and apply it to your writing when you sit down at the keyboard. And so I've taken that approach and I've tried to be honest and transparent and share my successes and share my failures. And that has served me very well. And, you know, kind of here I am.
How do you, because so often I talk to a writer and they have this idea that you said, but then imposter syndrome comes in and they say, well, who am I to write that? Or so-and-so did it better. And this is constant. I think my impression is that all of us suffer from imposter syndrome in different ways at different times and that it never really ever goes away. And in fact, it can get worse. Does that come up as you go through this process? Because again, it's not just that you have a YouTube channel and that's your thing. You're doing this in so many levels. Is that something that you have to navigate?
Yeah, absolutely. I deal with imposter syndrome quite a bit. And I had a mentor, and she told me something that I'll never forget. She said, in all the different jobs I've taken in my life, I never felt like I was, quote, that job title. Like, I never felt like I was an accountant. I never felt like I was a consultant. But at the end of the day, what I focused on is, number one, what can I learn? Number two, can that advance my career? And then number three, can I influence people moving forward? So yes, maybe I am not the Marques Brownlee of YouTube, you know, or of WritingTube, or I'm not Jake Paul or Logan Paul. I'm not some glitzy influencer with millions of followers. But what is it that I'm learning that I can use to influence people in the future? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but in terms of influencing people either to buy my books or influencing them to become more efficient and better writers themselves. And so everything I do in that regard is a learning experience and a way to sharpen the weapons that I've got in my shed, so to speak. And that analogy made no sense. I totally recognize that. Weapons in the shed. I don't know.
I want to see your shed. I love that. So this is that. So you mentioned you've published 50 books, and I think we last talked, you were writing something like 5 to 10 books a year, and I think you've settled into somewhere around 6 books a year. Is that generally right?
Yeah, that's about right. I write about 6 books a year. I write usually about two nonfiction books or so every year for authors. And my YouTube channel is called Author Level Up, by the way. I should have mentioned that. And then I try to write about 3 novels. And so far this year, I'm at, I think, 3, three books so far, and we're halfway through the year. So
it's astounding. And I think when we last talked about that, you know, I was like, well, how do you do this? And you talked about how you use your phone. Can you take us a bit through that again, and let me know, has that evolved as you, I mean, this is something I experience, which is the older I get, the more responsibility I have in life, in the business and family, all that stuff. Have you had to even evolve it from the phone and what you've been doing there, where every year you're kind of actually having to switch it up a little bit because, again, life is getting more and more complex?
Yeah, I would say before the pandemic, I wrote about 40% of my words on my phone. So that's while I was in the backseat of an Uber car, while I was at the doctor's office waiting to be seen. Just every little moments add up, right? So I use the Scrivener app on my phone, kind of capture my thoughts as I'm waiting for things. And that was how I learned to be really efficient, right? Because being in front of your computer, that's only something I'm able to do twice a day, really early in the morning and then really late at night. Now, I would say in the middle of the pandemic, I definitely have been writing on my computer more because I'm at home. But I still do write on my phone. I would say probably about 20% of the words that I write are on my phone. And that's just when I'm on the couch or I'm, you know, maybe spending some time with family, get a couple sentences in here and there. But yeah, I've learned that the most important thing you can do is master the tools of your trade, because if you can master those, then you can be more efficient.
So this is a totally game changing thing, not just because you're like, what's the app called and is it available on the iPhone, like that technical stuff. I'm going to bet that every writer listening to this just had a big thing in their head saying, write on this little 5-inch phone on a virtual keyboard, which maybe you've got the little Bluetooth thing. And they are just saying, nope, not me. That he's different. He's got his own, not me. And then if you, like, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, when you embrace that idea, how much changes? Because now, and you just said this, every little moment becomes an opportunity to create or an opportunity to be a part of your creative work. And it feels like, again, something that reframes every context that you're in. How do you get the, if you're in an Uber, and I'm imagining that this is fine, you're at work, and you're going to an airport, you're going somewhere, you're probably wearing clothes that aren't comfortable, you're in the back of a car, you're driving somewhere, you got luggage, maybe you're hungry, where you're at the doctor's office, which, no offense, no one loves being in the waiting room doctor. How do you get exactly in the mindset to say, I'm going to pull out my phone? What does that process look like?
Well, my question to people is, well, what are you doing now when you are at the doctor's office? Are you on Facebook? And how's that working out for you? You know? And if the answer is you're on Facebook or you're on Instagram, you already have the mindset to do it, right? Because once you start to switch, all it takes is a couple of times, and then you'll realize the benefit of it. So, you know, if I'm not saying to ignore people or to not talk to people, because some people say, well, if I write at the doctor's office or if I write in an Uber, then I'm not going to talk to anybody. And I say, no, that's not. If you get an Uber driver and you want to have a conversation with them, have a conversation. But if you got an Uber driver that's ignoring you, then you're gonna do something on your phone anyway. It's just a matter of what you choose to do. And I think a lot of people are either playing games or they're looking at social media or they're browsing the internet. And might you reframe that as an opportunity to write just a couple of sentences towards your work in progress? It is weird because it's like shifting gears the first few times you do it. But I think when you realize what the benefit is at the end of, say, a month, then, and you've got more words to show for it and you're further along in your current work in progress, then I think that's when people's mindsets start to change.
It's funny because it reminds me of, I'm 47. And I'm so thankful I'm this age because I got to exist in the world before the internet took over in the way that it did. And in college and after, I managed and worked at cafes. And I remember the time before people would come in, there was no phones as we know them now. And I always hear about this idea of, you know, people share a photo at a cafe and everyone's on their phone and they're like, oh, I miss the good old days when people weren't. I spent hundreds and hundreds of hours watching people at a cafe because I'm running the joint. And people are not all that social. People would go and they would bring their magazine, their newspaper, their notebook, and or even just sitting there with their coffee. And I'm not saying they weren't ever social, but it was not the social, you know, thing that we like to sentimentally remember. People largely kept to themselves. People are socially awkward. People have different goals and conversations. So I think it's to your point where, what are you doing anyway?
Yeah,
we're not being these amazing, curious people who are constantly, and maybe it's just me in New Jersey and we're just mean in New Jersey, but around here, I've not seen that as just a standard. So I think that's incredible. What you're saying, the idea of challenge yourself to think about, well, what else are you doing?
Yeah. And I have a book that talks about this. It's called Be a Writing Machine. And it's how to write better, how to write smarter, and beat writer's block forever. And I have an entire section in here dedicated to writing on my phone. And the book in general is, it's my manifesto of how to be more efficient as a writer and how to get through any kind of blocks that you're having in your career, whether it be mental, whether it be physical roadblocks. And so that has been a book that has resonated with a lot of people. And if you're interested, you can look it up or find it at authorlevelup.com/machine.
You also said something where, and you talked about this in an earlier interview, but also today a bit, which is, I think in the first interview you said something like, yeah, when I started writing on my phone, my the number of words I wrote in a month increased by 60%. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even matter what the numbers are. It's that, and you said this, you are into data. And I find that a lot of people don't track data, which I kind of get. They're not numbers people. It feels like work. It feels maybe like cold. But that, again, it's another way that you're totally, it's a game-changing thing. Because if you look at word count before and word count after, it's no longer about how do I feel about it. It's a lot more like, if I want to be a writer and this new thing increased my writing by 30%, maybe I should keep doing that.
Exactly. Yeah, writers and data don't mix sometimes, but we've got to start to change that, because if we're going to make a career out of what we're doing, you need data to make decisions. And if you don't have that data, or if you're not looking at it, then you can make a wrong decision, and that could have very real consequences and impacts on your financial life as a creative.
I think this also goes back to mental health. This idea that a lot of times people want to be a writer, want to finish a book. They've not thought about why or what the goal is or what the experience is, or as you said, like the idea of it being a career. And what I've found is it really sets people up for failure because, and I think a lot of us do this, I do this still in different ways, and I try not to, but like you sort of take a lottery ticket mentality, like, I want to write this book, and well, what are your goals? Oh, I don't know. And that's a lie. The goals are, well, I hope that all these people's lives are changed by it. Well, like, they're these big, vague, absurd goals, which are wonderful. I hope they happen to everyone. But we don't actually think of, yeah, is this a career? What could happen? What's the minimum? I went through this with an author yesterday. What's the minimum we'd like to happen? What's a kind of a stretch goal? And then what's the dream? And we really bulleted it out. And it was great because we kind of uncovered so many different things. Do you find, has your experience been that in working with writers where it's like that idea of taking it more as a career, is that a big block for a lot of people?
It's a huge block. And there's a number of reasons why it's a huge block. I think the first, and this is just real talk, is that our society does not place a premium on writers and creative endeavors. Our society says, oh, we love television shows, we love movies, we love music, we love books, but it doesn't place the same level of respect on the people that create those things, right? So I could say to a family member, oh, you should watch this television show, that's great. And they say, oh yeah, I love that TV show. That show changed my life. You know, I watch that show, you know, I watch Seinfeld every 5 years, even though I've seen every episode and can recite it, because it changed my life, right? And then in the very next sentence, you could say, well, a family member, I would love to go to school to be an actor. And they would say, oh, no, don't ever do that, because actors don't make any money. So at the same time, we've got this weird double standard where we put media up on a pedestal, but then we don't respect or believe that creators are worth or are worth that same level of respect. And so that societal block, I think, is in the back of all of our heads. And it pervades our family life. It pervades work life. I mean, come on, how many people do you work with that are like, oh yeah, you could be a writer. That's awesome, right? That most people just, they think it's kind of silly. So when we think about that, that is a roadblock, right? And I think that is a bigger roadblock in most people's mind than they're willing to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. Once you understand that, then you can come at the craft more meaningfully. But yeah, that's one of the big issues. Another issue is I think some people just don't think that they can do it. You know, that they maybe write their first book or they feel that it's inadequate or that it's not good enough. And then they read something by Stephen King or they read something by a bestseller and they compare themselves to that, not really understanding that it took Stephen King a long time to get to where he is today. It took him a long time to get to where he was at various levels of his career. And it's not fair to compare yourself to a mega bestseller. The only person you can truly compare yourself to is you. And once you start to understand those things, then a path to a meaningful and successful career, you can start to see it. But until you figure out those roadblocks, it's a problem. And that's why I think it's a problem for most writers.
Okay, so then there's just this new project. I didn't think you mentioned it, which I started noticing you talking about, which is this like sales tool that you're developing. And so one, I want to figure out, okay, what is this other thing that we haven't even mentioned yet that you're working on and why are you doing it? And then I mentioned this before the call where, you know, you had a bit of a bump in the road with it, which is you're developing and it's working and it's great, but then one version of it, you hit a wall with that. So talk to me a bit about what is this thing and why are you creating it? Because it seems like it's related to what you're doing, but a whole other new thing you got to figure out how to do from scratch.
Yeah. So before I share this, I will let people know that I have a podcast where I talked about this very actively. It's called The Writer's Journey. And it's basically me, like I said, turning on the microphone, talking about what's on my mind. So if anyone's interested, you can check that out. And it's the past few episodes, you can listen to it. So anyway, in the pandemic, I realized this is a great time to work on my writing business. So what are some of the problems that I'm having that are eating up a lot of my time, and how can I solve maybe one of those problems so that I can become more efficient as a writer and a business creative, right? So one problem that I decided to solve was the problem every month of figuring out how much my sales are. So I have a general idea of what my books are selling each month, but I didn't know the full number. And the reason for that is because I get probably 10 to 15 sales reports every single month. And I was spending 4 to 5 hours taking all the information from those spreadsheets and putting them into this master spreadsheet. And it was a nightmare, right? So I said, how can I automate this? Would there be an interesting way to be able to take all the 10 to 15 sales reports that I get from all the retailers? And then what if I could do something, sprinkle some pixie dust on those reports. And then with just a few clicks of a button, it transports all that information into one report that will show me how much I made, what books I sold, how much I sold, and then what are the trends. Mm. So essentially, I decided to build a tool and it's called Author Income Dojo. And what it does is you basically download all your sales reports into a folder. And then you click a button, and then the folder basically whips up all of your spreadsheets. It kind of kicks their butts, so to speak. That's why I call it a dojo. And it basically at the end of it, you have one report, and every month you can just refresh that report, and it will tell you all the data that you need to know in your business. So I built that for myself.
Wait. Yeah. So my brain is... My brain is melting right now because what I'm thinking of is not just all the things you do. I'm thinking, okay, what if this was me? Like, I'm like an okay, smart guy. Like, how would I approach this? And of course, it's sort of like, I wouldn't. I would run from this problem as fast as I can. I would not know how to think about conglomerating spreadsheets to do something and doing trends. So Where do you even start from the idea of thinking, like, how do I essentially become an app developer out of nowhere?
Well, I have to preface this with the fact that I don't really have a good knowledge of Microsoft Excel or any of this stuff. Like, you know those people where they type on the computer and they type with one hand?
Yeah.
That's kind of me with Microsoft Excel. So I had to learn how to use that. And you're right. A lot of people get really scared of this because that's why people don't know what their sales are, is because it's such a pain in the neck. Right. I mean, at one point I was hiring someone to do it for me, and they hated the job so much that they quit. they did it for like 2 months, and then they sent me a letter of resignation. And they're like, Michael, this job sucks. Right. So I couldn't hire someone to do this for me. That's how painful this is. And authors and creatives in general, it's just so painful that either they don't do it or you spend an inordinate amount of time doing it. So I said my process was, if I don't solve this problem and if I don't figure out my financial data, I may not have a successful business in 5 to 7 years, because every business knows what their data is. You know, you can't go to a flower shop and ask and find a flower owner that doesn't know how many roses they've sold, right? Or they don't know what their profit margin is. We are the only profession on the face of this earth that doesn't know that, right? That doesn't know what our numbers are. So I said, okay, I don't care what it takes. I'm going to solve this problem. And if it means developing an app, I will put my money where my mouth is and do that, because I have to solve it for me, right? And I basically learned the ins and outs of Microsoft Excel. I networked with some Excel MVPs, like the top Microsoft Excel people in the world. I networked with them, and they kind of helped me. I worked with a couple of developers. I worked with some people that had a really, really good understanding of databases, and I learned all that myself. And I basically built a tool that you don't have to know anything about databases or Excel or any of that. If you can watch a video and you can click some buttons, then you can handle it. And that's what I want. That's the solution I wanted for myself, right? Because I don't want to have to be doing coding every month or doing super technical stuff. I just want to be able to know what my sales are and then help other people know what their sales are. So the course is called Author Income Dojo. I'm in the process of building it. For those who are interested, you can check out a little bit more information on authorlevelup.com/dojo.
I love it. I'll put all the links, by the way, in the show notes.
Yeah.
It's neat too how it really underscores again, we started the conversation with this, the idea of foundation, which is if you want to not even have a full career as an author, but a sideline, you want to know how you're doing. The idea of embracing numbers and what data can you track, whether it's what you're writing or what you're selling, can have a profound effect on it. And just this idea of taking yourself seriously. And that has permeated everything that we've talked about, from family stuff to multifaceted jobs to law school to all of this, that idea of just totally investing in yourself and of not being like scared to do that.
Yeah, you can't be. What I've learned is that there's nothing in this life, in the writing life at least, to be afraid of. You know, we have problems. There's, you know, this isn't a perfect lifestyle, but there's very little to be afraid of. And if you start to abandon your fear, and one of the things that I've always said is, I'm going to throw myself into stuff. And even if I don't know how to do it, I'm going to throw myself into it. And if it becomes a dumpster fire, then it becomes entertainment for my audience. Then you can point and laugh at me and say, hey, Michael Aron did that a few years ago. Man, that was funny. So then it becomes an entertainment. So I say stuff that I'm doing out loud. So like when I started doing the sales tool, I told people I was doing it with no idea if it was going to succeed or not. I didn't even know what Microsoft Excel macros were when I did this, right? So people who are Excel savvy, you kind of understand what a problem that is. And so I would just, that's been my platform. I just talk about stuff. And if it succeeds, then I hope that people in my audience can learn from it. And maybe there's something you can do to help your business. And if it fails, it's a fun learning experience. I make fun of myself. And hopefully you learn something about what not to do or how to do things differently.
All right, we've covered a lot in this conversation. Is there anything that I haven't asked about or that you're working on that you think we definitely should cover?
Yeah, absolutely. So first things first, if you want to know all the things I'm doing, because we talked about a lot, you can find out my home base. My home base is at authorlevelup.com. You can find my YouTube channel, all the books I've done for writers, and all that good stuff. And one thing that I'm working on that I think your audience would be interested in is I'm working on a book right now called Your Self-Publishing Questions Answered. And it is 150 writing, publishing, and marketing tips that every indie author should know. All right. So if you're wanting to write a book, if you're into the self-publishing thing and you want to take your game to the next level, I'm writing this book and you can find out more information on that at authorlevelup.com/questions. And I've written the book, the ebook paperback, and I'm actually narrating the audiobook. So that'd be kind of a fun thing. If you like audiobooks and you want to hear me talk and read one, then you can hear me do that.
Michael, thank you so much. I mean, I think the audience must have heard me kind of giggling the entire conversation. I'm just so inspired and blown away by not just all that you do. It's the intention and the spirit with which you do it. It is so inspiring to me. I just want to thank you for sharing all of this.
No, Dan, thank you so much for having me back on. This has been an absolute pleasure.
You can find Michael Laron at authorlevelup.com. At michaelleron.com, and is it's Michael and then LARONN. His podcast is called The Writer's Journey. Over on YouTube, it's Author Level Up. And he mentioned the book Be a Writing Machine in the episode. And of course, he has literally dozens of other books that you can look up wherever books are sold. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me at wegrowmedia.com. And on social media @DanBlank. Thank you so much for listening until the end.